We're going to be discussing about Krishna. Isn't that nice? I've a couple things. I feel little bad that in the course of planning things, somehow it just was forgotten that this is the monthly Sankirtan festival day, and here we are having a nice program indoors. And it's the Bud Billiken parade. For some of you, it doesn't mean anything. But for some people, it's their once a year big event for money in South Chicago. Organizes this event, and it's an important event. For it's a nationally televised event. It's a huge event, and we're off in the suburbs of Palatine having a nice program. So, on behalf of Gauramani, I already apologized to him, but you can put it in your thoughts or your calendar or whatever that next year, whatever, it's the second weekend in August or something like that. Is that right? Second weekend of August. Nationally televised event. Lord Jagannath, that big Lord Jagannath, you know? Giant. Jagannath is in the parade. Millions of people, literally, because of televised scene. I've taken part in the parade in the past, and there's a lot of people there. So, I try to remember Krishna in any event. And in honor of Krishna Janmashtami, which is coming very soon, a suggestion was made that we speak something about in anticipation of the advent of Krishna. So specifically the suggestion was made the little section where Vasudev and Devaki, along with something like nine other sisters of Devaki, were married at the same time as Vasudev and Devaki. And the pronouncement that the eighth child of Devaki would kill Kamsa, and then Kamsa's diabolical behavior, and Vasudev's trying to convince Devaki not to kill his sister on her wedding day. Would be very nice. People, your reputation will be spoiled if you do that, as if you cared. So, let's see. Five children in our bed will count you as one of them. See if each one of you, start with Krishna Chaitanya, say something about either Vasudev, Devaki, or Kamsa. Just one thing. Krishna Chaitanya, share with us something that you think of when you hear about Kamsa or Vasudev and Devaki. One thing. He's pretending like he didn't hear my question. One thing. Kamsa was?
Evil-minded.
Okay. That's an understatement. He definitely was evil-minded. What are some of the things, Krishna Chaitanya, what are some of the things that you know about Kamsa that convince you or lead you to say that he was evil-minded? What did he do that was demonstrating his evil-mindedness? What did he do?
He was going to kill the
who's going to kill his sister. That's pretty evil-minded. What else? Before that. Something before that. What do you know about Kamsa before that? Kamsa. Or after that? Who was Kamsa's father? The king of the Yadu dynasty. His name was? Can you remember? He's trying to remember. Do you know the story of the Shamataka jewel?
Yeah.
So when Satrajit came into Dwarka, Krishna asked Satrajit to give the jewel to the king, whose name was? Ugrasena. Do you remember that? Yeah. Ugrasena was the father of?
Kamsa.
So, you know what Kamsa did? He put his father in prison and usurped the throne. He didn't kill his father, he just put him in jail and sat on the throne as if he was the king instead of Ugrasena, his father. He was evil-minded. Like you said. Bad. Who was one of the best friends of Kamsa? Jarasandha, correct. You probably do know, Jarasandha had two daughters and he gave them in marriage to Kamsa. So they were like, Jarasandha was a little older, he had two daughters, he gave those two daughters in marriage to Kamsa. So when Krishna killed Kamsa, the two daughters went back to their father and said, Daddy, help! Krishna just killed our husband. Please do something. So Jarasandha said, I'll do something. I'm going to destroy the whole Yadu dynasty. I take a vow. So Kamsa had many persons who were associates of him who were like him. Birds of a feather flock together. Crows hang out with crows, and swans hang out with swans. He was crow-like, and he had lots of crow-like friends. Kamsa. Kamsa, before he took the throne of Ugrasena, he was so powerful, he went in all directions with the royal army, and he conquered all kings in all directions. Leaving just those kings with all of their armies defeated. He was so powerful. And he gave them a choice. Either you surrender to me and assist me and in our kingdom, or I'll kill you. Which would you prefer? So other demoniac kings became associates of Kamsa. He was not only mighty himself, but he had many others. And he was, as is the nature of demoniac mentality, he was relying on his strength in other demoniac associates. Not upon Krishna, but upon the power of demoniac associates. Okay, so now we have four others. We'll skip him, okay. You three girls, would you like to say something? One something about Vasudev or Devaki or Kamsa? We'll start over here. Just one thing. Vasudev was? Whose sister? The brother. You're the brother of? No. He was the brother of? He had a sister. Vasudev and fill in the blank were brother and sister. You had it right, just got the wrong name in that space. Who is the son of Vasudev and Devaki? Krishna. And Krishna had some cousins. Who are his cousins? The Pandavas. So who was the mother of the Pandavas? Kunti. So Kunti and Vasudev were sister and brother. Did you know that? I didn't know that. Vasudev had a sister whose name was Kunti. And Kunti had children. And Vasudev had a child. And they were cousins. That's how they were cousins. Okay. Good. Somebody's phone is ringing. So, something you'd like to say about Vasudev or Devaki? Yes? Anything. One thing. Huh?
About Kamsa too?
Okay, about Kamsa too. Go ahead. One thing. He tried to kill Krishna. How did he try to kill Krishna? In what ways? Shakatasura. And then Trinavarta. So many asuras. Krishna killed them all. Very good. Someone something about Vasudev and Devaki or Kamsa.
Was it Rohini Vasudev's wife?
Yes, one of the sisters. Can you describe a little bit more?
Rohini's son was Balaram?
Yeah. Yeah.
And she lived with Yashoda
and Mahabharata. Yeah. Vasudev, fearing the wickedness of Kamsa, just like Krishna Chaitanya said, he was wicked-minded. So, fearing when Rohini was who was one of Vasudev's wives, was in danger, he sent his wife Rohini to stay under the shelter of Nanda and Yashoda. So she lived, one of Vasudev's wives lived in Vrindavan. For the whole time that Krishna and Balaram were in Vrindavan, Rohini came to know all about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan because she was there. She was the mother of Balaram. So it's very important because later on, Rohini, along with the rest of the Yadu dynasty, including Vasudev and Devaki, they all moved to Dwarka. She's the only one amongst all of them that really had the inside story on Vrindavan. So it comes out in later pastimes, like in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, very beautiful description of the residents of Dwarka asking Rohini to describe the pastimes of Krishna. And it comes in other Puranic literature, Niskanda Purana, where the glories of Lord Jagannath are described. She is describing the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. And in Rupa Goswami's Lalita Madhava and Didanta Madhava, In Lalita Madhava, there's a description of Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka, and Rohini plays a very important part. Rohini, mother of Balaram and one of the wives of Vasudeva. Because one cannot understand Krishna in Vrindavan, unless one has the association of one who has knowledge of Krishna in Vrindavan. It's, in other words, it's a devotional understanding. It's not possible through academic, you know, study and that kind of thing. Just not possible. So, but Rohini made it possible for the residents of Dwarka to get some insight into the nature of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Okay. We're looking for a chair. There's a chair. Why don't you take that chair and put the chair over there? Is that okay? He's getting another one, but is this one okay?
Yeah.
You'll have two chairs by the time we get here. Comes chair number one, right behind you. Okay. So we're going to be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, of which Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a summary study, and that looked like the children's version. So some of you may know some children. I know a few children, and they may be interested in hearing about Krishna before Krishna Janmashtami. So this is Canto 10, Chapter 1, where there's a detail. If you look at the family line, anyway, it's a long story. From one of the Puranas, it describes Vasudeva and Devaki are not exactly brother and sister, because they're not exactly having the same mother and father. But it's a long story. One of those chronic stories. But they were like, you know, they're related. And so, like brother and sister. So when Devaki was married, the marriage takes place at the girl's residence, and then the girl after marriage is taken to her new husband's residence, and Kamsa volunteered, "I'll do the honor, I'll be your driver, I'll be your chauffeur, I'll drive your taxi or your limousine or your chariot from there to your new place." So on his chariot, Vasudeva and Devaki behind, him sitting in the front. When the bride and bridegroom were ready to start, conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums all vibrated in concert for their auspicious departure. While Kamsa, controlling the reins of the horses, was driving the chariot along the way, an unembodied voice. What's the Sanskrit? A sharira vak. Sharira is body. Like sharira avidya jal. Sharira is the body. So this is a sharira vak. An unembodied voice, a voice from the sky. Addressed him, "You foolish rascal!" Because unembodied voices can say things like that. "The eighth child of the woman you are carrying will kill you!" Kamsa didn't waste any time. because he was envious and sinful upon hearing this omen from the sky. With one hand he caught hold of his sister's hair, because he was right-handed, he did that with his left hand, and with his right hand he raised his sword, ready to cut off her head, just after her marriage. How'd you like to have a brother like that? Your brother. And her new husband is right by her side, literally, wanting to pacify Kamsa, who was so cruel and envious that he was shamelessly ready to kill his sister. The great soul Vasudeva, who was to be the father of Krishna, spoke to him in the following words. So, in the purport it says specifically, Vasudeva was such a great personality that he remained undisturbed, unagitated, sober, and peaceful. I mean, that's pretty extraordinary. Now he, Vasudeva, was part of the royal family. So he's a king. He's not a weakling, he's a king. But amongst those who are kings, some have different specialities, and his was more advisory-like or more intellectual-like amongst the kings. So he was something like a minister, although he was a king. And so he used that ministerial skill to consider the ways and the means to take away this rage of uncontrolled anger from Kamsa, which was a challenge because he's a formidable demon, like Krishna Chaitanya said. He was an evil-minded person. So we'll just discuss, he used different strategies. He tried this and he tried that and he tried other things until he found the right combination. First message. My dear brother-in-law, Kamsa, you are the pride of your family. It's called flattery. The Bhoja dynasty and great heroes praise your qualities. You're up there. You're great. How could such a qualified person as you kill a woman? It's sinful. Your own sister, even more abominable, especially on the occasion of her marriage, it's unthinkable for an elevated person like you. How could you possibly consider such an act? And Prabhupada explains, he's invoking, character. In Vedic culture, there are five groups of people, categories of living entities that are always to be protected and never to be harmed, and one of them is women, and you can't kill a woman. You can't do that. Like one of the explanations, when Krishna was approached by Putana and she tried to poison him, Krishna closed his eyes. And our acharyas say one of the reasons why he closed his eyes was the first demon he had to kill was a woman. He didn't want to even see her because she's a woman. How can I kill a woman? So he closed his eyes. Another was, she's so wicked, I don't even want to see her. But nonetheless, Kamsa was prepared to kill his sister, so he's saying this is not to be done. Your reputation as king will be damaged. Now, it's interesting because even demoniac people care about their reputation. There's many examples. So they would follow the strictures of Scripture, of course, to their diabolical or demoniac purposes. But, you know, part of it was their reputation. They would not. Like when Jarasandha was defeated by Krishna the first time, and he was going back, Krishna sent him, "Go, you can go home now." So as he's returning back home, he was thinking, this is so humiliating. A Kshatriya leaving the battlefield when all of his armies are killed and I go back home safe. Better I just give up my life. Because having once been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So even for demons, dishonor is something they don't want. They value being honored. Or else, I'll kill you. So it's something they value. So he's appealing to his false ego. You're such a great person, you'll be dishonored for doing this. And there's no response. So now he goes into the position of speaking about transcendental knowledge. Several verses, actually. Oh, great hero, one who takes birth is sure to die, for death is born with the body. One may die today or after 100 years, but death is sure for every living entity. So you're going to die anyway. So whether it's the death from the eighth child of Devaki or some other means, you're going to die anyway. So just accepting the fact that you're going to die anyway, are you ready to do something so abominable as this in order to, what? Check death? You're going to die anyway. So don't try to check death by something that's going to ruin your reputation and be very sinful. Then he speaks of, you know, the consequences of sinful activity in a very interesting way. Just as a person traveling on the road rests one foot on the ground and then lifts the other walking, or as a worm on a vegetable transfers itself to one leaf and then gives up the previous one. So like an inchworm, it goes like this, touches the next leaf, and then whoop, the back goes up and the hind legs come to where the front legs are. As these are examples given for the soul transmigrating from the present body to the next body. The next body is accepted before the previous body is given up. It means, you know, the destination is determined that way. As like the worm on a vegetable, like that, or walking on a road. So similarly, the conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and gives up the one he had before. And there's rules that determine which one you get. You do something in this one that creates a situation that's bad for the next one, that's not a good plan. If you do this abominable thing to your sister, you're going to, the next body is going to be bad. Having, this is still Vasudev speaking, having experienced a situation by seeing or hearing about it, one contemplates and speculates about that situation, and thus one surrenders to it, not considering his present body. The future situation occupies your thoughts so much you forget the present situation. Similarly, by mental adjustments, one dreams at night of living under different circumstances in different bodies and forgets his actual position. Under the same process, one gives up his present body and accepts another. And there's a 4-page purport. at the time of death, according to the thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, which is involved in fruitive activities, one receives a particular body. In other words, the body develops according to the activities of the mind. Changes of body are due to the flickering of the mind. For otherwise, the soul could remain in its original spiritual body. So your material thoughts carry you to the next destination. He's still talking about transmigration of the soul and the negative effect of doing some wicked thing in this life, like killing your sister on her wedding day. So now he's going to, you know, the configuration, the thoughts within the mind, as preceding and leading up to the time of death, and that determines the next body. This next thing is very interesting. When the luminaries in the sky, such as the moon, the sun, and the stars, are reflected in liquids, like oil or water, they appear to be in different shapes, sometimes round, sometimes long, and so on, because of the movements of the wind. It moves the surface of the water or the oil, and so the shape of the moon or other objects get stretched out, or maybe they're round. Or similarly, when the living entity, the soul, is absorbed in materialistic thoughts, he accepts various manifestations as his own identity because of ignorance. In other words, one is bewildered by mental concoctions because of agitation from the material modes of nature. Now, I'm surprised that Kamsa is listening to this long-winded discussion. He's got his sword raised, his hand is on her hair, he's ready to chop her head off, and he's giving a Bhagavad Gita class. Therefore, since envious, impious activities, like killing your sister on a wedding day, cause a body in which one suffers in the next life, why should one act impiously? Consider your welfare. Don't be envious of Devaki. For the envious person always must fear harm from his enemies, either in this life or the next. You do this to Devaki and you're going to get yours in your next life. As your younger sister, this poor girl, Devaki, like, you know, as if he had a soft heart or something, is like your own daughter, his younger sister, and deserves to be affectionately maintained. You are merciful, and therefore you should not kill her. Indeed, she deserves your affection. Kamsa hasn't dropped his sword yet. So he's tried flattery. He's tried explaining the consequence of sinful activity. Your reputation will be harmed. And that's important to you. Your situation in your next life will be really bad because of what you've done. And you'll also be on the receiving end of something like this because of doing something like this in this life. You'll be on the receiving end in your next life. Kamsa's not moved. So he's going to shift gears and try another approach. Specifically, this is now Shukadeva Goswami said Kamsa didn't care about the results of sinful activities. He's like, you know, really hard person. He didn't mind doing sinful things. So then Shukadeva Goswami says it's the duty of someone, all of us, as long as we have bodily strength and as long as we have some amount of intelligence, it's necessary to avoid death. And it's a duty, especially those who were entrusted to give protection to. If death cannot be avoided in spite of one's endeavors, a person facing death commits no offense. So he has to keep trying. Somehow, maybe Kamsa will become a little flexible. So Vasudeva contemplates to himself, by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth. Or, since he is already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat, and if in due course of time Kamsa dies, then I shall have nothing to fear. Buying some time, saving Devaki's life. Then he contemplates, this is a minister contemplating saving his wife's life. When a fire, for some unseen reason, leaps over one piece of wood and sets fire to the next, the reason is destiny. Similarly, when a living being accepts one kind of body and leaves aside another, there is no other reason than unseen destiny. Let's read what Prabhupada writes in the purport, because that's a little puzzling. When there's a fire in a village, this is the purport, the fire sometimes jumps over one house and burns another. Similarly, when there's a forest fire, the fire sometimes leaps over one tree and catches another. Why this happens, no one can say. One may set forth some imaginary reason why the nearest tree or the house did not catch fire, and so on. But actually the reason is destiny. This reason also applies to the transmigration of the soul, by which a prime minister in one life may become a dog in the next. You know the history behind Prabhupada making this statement? There was an astrologer that said when Nehru died, his next life he became a dog, or something like that. One of two dogs in Sweden, or something like that. Yeah. So, prime minister, next life a dog. The work of unseen destiny cannot be ascertained by practical experimental knowledge, and therefore one must be satisfied by reasoning that everything is done by supreme providence. So, although Kamsa is, so the metaphor here is the fire and catching or some distant place and skipping, so Kamsa's anger is towards Devaki. His attempt is to rescue Devaki and send that fire-like anger and viciousness towards some other direction. Therefore, Vasudeva submitted his proposal to the sinful Kamsa with great respect. Vasudeva's mind was full of anxiety because his wife was facing danger. But in order to please the cruel, shameless, and sinful Kamsa, he externally smiled and spoke to him as follows. Vasudeva said, "Oh, best of the sober, you have nothing to fear from your sister, Devaki, because of what you have heard from the unseen omen. the cause of death will be her sons. Therefore, I promise that when she gives birth to the sons from whom your fear has arisen, I shall deliver them unto your all, unto your hands. And Kamsa had so much confidence in the word. This is important. Kamsa had so much confidence in the word of Vasudeva that he said, okay. Because Vasudeva will keep his word. And if Vasudeva says this, then he'll do this. Kamsa agreed. And having full faith in Vasudeva's words, he refrained from killing his sister. Vasudeva, being pleased with Kamsa, pacified him further and entered his own house. Here's the short purport. Although Kamsa was a sinful demon, he believed that Vasudeva would never deviate from his word. The character of a pure devotee, like Vasudeva, is such that even so great a demon as Kamsa firmly believed in his words and was satisfied. Prabhupada quotes the Bhagavatam verse, Yasyasti Bhaktir Bhagavatya Kinchana. Sarvayar Vinyas Tatra Samasa Tesara, which means that when you become a devotee of the quality of Vasudeva, then Krishna decorates that on the strength of devotion, but Krishna decorates the devotee with all good qualities, and one of those qualities is upholding truth. You give your word, you keep your word. Even it can be very difficult to keep your word. You give your word, you keep your word. And as it goes on, we know Vasudeva kept his word. And when Vasudeva came and brought the first child, Kamsa was pleased and a little surprised and so much in awe of Vasudeva that, well, it was the eighth child of Devaki, not the first child, that was going to do something, so you keep the child. Vasudeva didn't trust Kamsa, and he had good reason not to, because the minister said to Kamsa, well, wait a minute. Yeah, the boy said the eighth child of Devaki, but who knows, some mighty funny business, and you should kill the child. In fact, you should kill all the children that have been born in recent times. Yeah, I should kill that child. Kill them all. So he killed the child. As the chapter goes on, and the killing of the first six sons of Devaki, there's lots of Vaishnav Acharya commentary. Just as the verse describes, Kamsa is sin personified, and there are consequences for sin, or the root of all bad activity. You're familiar with the six enemies of a conditioned soul: kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarja. Those six. And so, and those six, according to our Acharya's commentary, each of the children of Devaki are representations of those six. So Krishna is making arrangements so that Vasudeva and Devaki, whatever residual trace of those foibles or those weaknesses of the conditioned soul, are removed from her, so that she could then, in a fully purified, fully cleansed condition, give birth to Krishna. And Kamsa is remarkably the agent for doing that. So when a devotee, in other words, when a devotee confronts in life some difficult person or harsh person or, you know, very dangerous person, some difficult person, we don't like it. At the same time, it has its improvement, its benefit. And one who takes shelter of Krishna can realize that, and one who doesn't take shelter of Krishna just struggles. Just a little sharing. It's like a nice realization from a new devotee. When I was in China, one of the places that I visited, there was a complication for, without the details, because I don't, this is being recorded, so it's just, there's a complication for the person who normally organizes things. And because of that complication and conflict that was going on in his life, he was, not only he was like mentally absent and energetically absent, he was compromised in other ways, like, you know, his good discrimination had gone, his patience was gone, and it was circumstantial. Good devotee, just, you know, caught in a very difficult circumstance, and I'm coming to visit that place where he normally does everything, gets everything organized and set up. And then, you know, some of the people that wanted to assist him, he was like physically there but not there. You know, understanding the circumstance that he was going through, very difficult. But he was not there to do what he normally does, and even, you know, when they would, well, at least give some suggestions, and he'd get grumpy and say something harsh, and oh, and, you know, so there's these new devotees that, what to do? So they sent out a all points bulletin to the, you know, this, the older devotees that oversee things. Help! What to do? Help! And so it was, you know, about to parachute in. They couldn't. They had to organize things really fast, and so they just threw their hands up in the air and said, "I have to depend on Krishna." And as soon as that happened, all kinds of other things happened. Like, the little light went on that said, this particular person is struggling hard and I shouldn't be asking him for anything because he's just putting all his energy into dealing with this conflict situation. So, I shouldn't expect, let me forgive, let me depend on Krishna. And then all kinds of doors started to open and things started to happen, and, you know, this is a very new devotee realizing, you know, Krishna. And then it got worse again. And then, you know, round two of feeling anxiety, and then just, I have to depend on Krishna. And then, once again, things started moving, and they could understand it wasn't them, it was Krishna's making things happen, at least in part, because instead of being the controller kind of thing, or the, they were just trying to be surrendered to Krishna and in Krishna's service. And everything worked out, much to their amazement. I didn't know all this. When I was there, I wasn't like clueless, but I remarked to this devotee that was kind of having to fill in the place of the person who normally does things. I said, and knowing what their situation is that they're having to deal with, I said, you're pretty good at handling pressure. they just smiled, and they wrote later saying, it's just, I felt Krishna's protection, that's all. So going back to the very beginning of this discussion, Vasudev, he's a pure devotee. In fact, the Vasudev state is described in the scriptures. It's the invitation for Vasudev to appear. Krishna appears where there's purity. Krishna doesn't appear where there's not purity. So we can struggle, again, duratyaya, struggle with the material energy. But you take shelter of Krishna with full dependence upon Krishna, and Krishna appears. That's why Krishna appeared as the son of Vasudeva Devaki, because they were pure. So those that are pure, it's not that because you're pure there's never any difficulty. That's not the case. It's not that because you have difficulty it means that you're pure either. It's how you regard those things and the position of, or energetic position of shelter taking shelter in Krishna is the real standard. And then the reciprocation of Krishna is, may not be what you want the reciprocation from Krishna to be, but it's very clear the reciprocation from Krishna is there. Just like this. There was a whole series of things that happened in the course that I was visiting this particular place. Without the details. Well, one of the details. Well, the place where we were staying, there was a devotee who was coming, who was a translator. We traveled from one place to the next place because he's a good translator. And they put us up in a place that, it turns out, the person that signed us up for the room had to ask us after one day to leave because that place doesn't have a permit from the government to allow foreign people to stay in that hotel. So we had to like right away leave. And then they had to right away make another arrangement and cancel this and shift things over there, and in the midst of all the other things that are going on. So, you know, turmoil and chaos and conflict. But it all worked out. It all worked out very, you know, simply. And the devotee just remained very calm, peaceful. Learning, I mean, that they're, well, so they shared later, just they were appreciating how Krishna does things when you're depending on him, and how, even if it's challenging, you depend on Krishna and Krishna does things. There's the relationship is very real and genuine, and this is a new devotee. Not like, and they don't have association like here. There's no temples. It's not a place where you can go and, you know, get association and do some devotional service and see the deity and join a kirtan. There's no such thing. Getting real fast forward kinds of realizations from Krishna because of that spirit of depending upon him, relying upon him. So the challenge of that person is not the same as the challenge that was faced by Vasudev. But Vasudev remained saintly, calm, peaceful, considering, what to do to calmly and thoughtfully make this arrangement so that Devaki is protected. Being a minister, he used his expertise in diplomacy. Something like what Sanatan Goswami did with the person that was in charge of the prison where he was captured. He flattered the prison keeper and said, according to the Quran, one gets much pious credit if one frees someone from material existence, from the bondage of material existence. See my bondage of material existence? You'll get much pious credit if you free me. Surely you'll attain heaven. And not only that, here's 10,000 gold coins. He was tempted. He said, but I can't do this because if the king comes to know, if the qazi comes to know that I've freed you, what's the 10,000 gold coins going to do me? I'll be a dead man. So, no problem. You can tell him that Sanatan had to go pastoral, and he went to the river and jumped in the river with his chains on and he drowned. I searched for him, couldn't find him, so he's dead. You can tell him that. And here's 12,000 gold coins. Okay. Using diplomacy. Now, that doesn't justify we can say any old thing to achieve any old thing we want to do. Prabhupada is very specific about that in this relation to Sanatana Goswami. And similarly in relation here to Vasudev didn't make up a story. He made a commitment and he kept his commitment. So, but practical things may need to be done in very dire circumstances. But, you know, with a cool head and with the purpose of service to Krishna, pleasing Krishna, in such a way that Krishna will be pleased and a higher purpose of Krishna's service is achieved. So, this is giving some indication of the qualification of one who had become the father of Krishna. Now, how Krishna became his son was not the ordinary way that a son is born or a child is born. Because of his purified mind, Krishna entered in his purified mind, and Krishna then transferred himself from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki and to the womb of Devaki, and then appeared later by his own will. But because of their purity, because of their 100% dependence upon and the personality of Godhead and their purity, Krishna became their son. But part of the reason for picking this little section is prior to Janmashtami, bring thoughts to Krishna's appearance. Prior to Janmashtami, read the wonderful sections. There's a whole chapter that follows this, the prayers of the demigods to Lord Krishna in the womb. Beautiful prayers. I remember Ravindra Sarup Prabhu gave a week-long seminar just on those prayers. We were in Gita Nagari, this is some long time back. But we had, instead of just a like Memorial Day weekend retreat, we had a week-long institute. It was difficult for people to attend on weekdays, so it became a weekend thing. But before it was just a weekend thing, it was a week-long thing. And he gave a whole presentation on the prayers. And he, you know, is brilliant. He's a brilliant speaker. The section is also very nice. Prior to Krishna Janmashtami, reading that section is, you know, read a prayer a night or something like that. You still won't finish because it's between now and then. It's more prayers. Read two a night. They're very nice. In anticipation of Krishna's appearance, as the demigods were doing. Hare Krishna. So any comments or questions? Yes?
Maharaj, that unbodied voice, if it had not spoken, what was the need for that voice to speak to Kansa and give him the warning? Everything could have been done quietly.
There's another circumstance where this takes place, but the purpose is to augment or to enhance Krishna's pastimes. That's all. For Kamsa to do what he did, the voice had to be spoken. So the voice was spoken. So Krishna could perform his pastimes. Kamsa would send demons. Krishna would kill the demons. The residents of Vrindavan would then intensify their shelter taking in Krishna when the demon would come and celebrate, oh, Krishna is so wonderful, after the demon would be killed. Just intensification of loving exchanges with Krishna. And so forth. Yes?
I had a question, but before that, can I share a comment on this question? What I heard?
Sure.
I have heard that the demigods didn't want Krishna to think that Kamsa did some service for my mother. So, you know, in the sense that not to kill him, you know, Krishna may think that some service Kamsa did, because he did, he acted as a charioteer for Devaki. So, the demigods didn't want that to happen, so they just...
They didn't want him to get the credit of rendering service to a devotee?
Krishna may think that he did some service, so he may not kill him. So, so the demigods didn't want that to happen. They wanted Kamsa to be dead.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Where did you hear that from?
I don't remember. That's why I wanted to check that. Correct.
Let me comment on what you just commented.
It should be from the...
Yeah. That's my comment. And if you don't know, then you don't repeat it. If you don't know, then research till you can find out. And there's something, oh, somebody said it. Then from what scripture does that come?
Well, I had a question.
Okay.
You know, when the mind gets agitated, like the situation comes that happened for Vasudeva, that Kamsa is about to kill his wife, how was he so cool and composed? What was the state of his mind?
He had full shelter in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was a pure devotee. Which means he had full shelter in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead was his shelter, and therefore he was able to exhibit that quality.
How can we, in that situation, increase that?
Not just in that, it's not just wait for the situation, it's how you practice your everyday devotional activities. Do them mechanically, and when danger comes, it's panic. Like Prabhupada gives the example, you can teach a parrot to say Krishna's name. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. And then a cat comes. Squawk, squawk, squawk. So, not mechanical, but devotional. Practice with devotion, and then when duality manifests this or that or the other feature, there's shelter. Good fortune, ill fortune, swarga, apavarga, narakeshu. Apitulyarchadarshanam. But it's not just when the circumstance gets really extreme what to do. It's what to do when it's not an extreme circumstance. And when shelter is there, you're in the position of shelter. And for a Vaishnav, amplification of either good fortune or ill fortune can be an opportunity for simply taking deeper shelter. And, you know, in different, Krishna has different arrangements for different devotees. For Sudama, Brahman, it was good fortune. But his mind didn't waver because of the good fortune. And Prahlad Maharaj, it's ill fortune. Wicked father trying to kill him. Just shelter in the personality of Godhead. So we have, in the preliminary stage, we have practices that help foster that. Cleansing and, you know, especially hearing and chanting awakens our dormant affection, natural affection for the shelter of Krishna, attachment to Krishna. So regular and qualitative hearing of the glorifications of Krishna. Then there's reason for taking shelter of him. Impetus. Stimulations for ecstatic love. Udipan. Yeah? Yes?
Thank you very much, first of all, for coming to our place and, you know, sanctifying our home.
You're going to have to go distribute some books afterwards.
Thank you. And thank you for the nice class. And I was just thinking, I guess you kind of answered this question when you were answering the previous one, but thinking about the devotee who was, who you mentioned organizing all the activities, and he got into a circumstance where, he was very low and, others were trying to support him. I do not know the name of the devotee, but thinking about that devotee, and eventually he did realize, or he did come back to the understanding that Krishna, we need to take Krishna's shelter, in such a circumstance. So I was thinking, in my case, or in somebody who's who doesn't practice everything, or who, in a very sincere way, I'm not very sincere when I do something, and I tend to forget, like after I realize that, this is Krishna's mercy, and I've taken Krishna's shelter now, and because of Krishna I've come out of this really bad situation. And then after a while, I forget it again, and then I come back and I'm like, how did I forget that? I'm again doing the same mistake, and and eventually again I try to realize, when I try to go for shelter of Krishna, then I'm like, okay, I was, already seeking shelter of Krishna, then I came out, then I'm seeking it again, I mean, this cycle is just, for me, I think, I'm just...
What's your question?
So...
How to become steady, basically, is your question?
How to become steady. Yeah.
How to go from unsteady to steady.
Yes.
Bhajana Kriya. That's a short answer for a long question. But that's how the nishtha, the stage of nishtha comes as a result of the anarthas becoming eradicated. And what you described is the influence of the anarthas, that they may be diminished at a certain point of time, but then they become revived again. And there's a big stockpile that are in a seed-like stage and not yet fructified. And they're continuing to fructify and continuing to fructify. So, when it's not just a matter of breaking, how much time you put in breaking rock on the rock pile. It's not a mechanical thing. there's a pile of rocks over there, and you start to move the pile of rocks over there to over there, and it looks like the pile of rocks keeps getting bigger. even as you're moving more rocks from here to there, the job increases. So it's not just quantitative, it's qualitative. And that's just an adjustment or a development at a maturing stage of bhakti, where it's not intermittent or off and on. Anishtha. It's nishtha. It's steadily being in that position. And the price that one has to pay is, one can, you can say steadiness. Steadiness in the execution of the activities of bhakti brings steadiness in bhakti. It's not just, it's not mechanical, it's not numerical or quantitative only. I've attended, my thoughts are going now to our japa retreats and our the Festival of the Holy Name, which is the last time I was here. And not only the sharing that took place on the day of the festival, people wrote afterwards, and like those experiences where, there's anticipation, there's preparation, and there's execution, and then sometimes it's a struggle, and then sometimes there's a breakthrough, and then sometimes it goes back to struggle, and that's just our unsteadiness. And that's just one day, but we have so many days. Every day is an opportunity. And if we take the opportunity with a freshness, renewing our submission into Krishna kind of freshness, then you enter into another arena towards steadiness and away from the unsteadiness. It's the effort that you make, the sincere devotional effort. We're prone to complacency. We like to just be comfortable and stay in the comfort zone. But it doesn't work that way. The devotional effort needs to be sustained over time. And then feelings of devotion and the attraction for the object of devotion and wait. Otherwise, Bahunam Jamadante Kalaman Mampapajita. What good is with many, many births one can pass through. Bahu Janma Kariyari Shravana Kirtana. Even when one engages in the Shravana Kirtana process, if one continues to make offenses, one will go on for millions of lifetimes. You have something? No? Just scratching. Okay. Yes?
That massage was raising my society.
Huh?
That massage was also raising the form of society.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Maharaj.
I don't have good peripheral vision. Now I know she's over here.
So, I understand from your narration that Vasudeva is very qualified and also his devotion to Krishna is so strong. At the same time, the situation was very dire.
Yes.
Somebody is with a sword in his hand trying to kill his own wife. So at that time, I understood some of the initial words of his diplomacy, so-called flattery. In our daily circumstances as a sadhaka, my dilemma is especially when I go on trying to give some books to people on the streets.
Book distribution is a wonderful instructor. Go ahead.
So, some of the things that I have from seeing so many different leaders in book distribution, I'm trying to...
Be concise. Be concise. Keep it... Go ahead.
To what extent I can use the honesty the straight message as opposed to saying something out of flattery.
Well, something that Prabhupada said is, two things. As far as the subject matter, the book, there's no, exaggerated glorification. There's no such thing. It's superlative in all regards. Especially if you're familiar with what's in the book, then you can say things that are of glorification of what's in the book, then it's not, you know, empty eulogy. Now, as far as saying something to the other person, I mean, we're using some matter of diplomacy in any case. You know, if you just take the stark, you know, skeletal situation of people's lives, it's way down there in the modes of nature. But that's not the starting point of, you know, my dear sir, you're really deep in the mode of ignorance and you need some light. You know, we don't speak like that. So, in other words, Prabodhananda Saraswati. Prabhupada, you know who that is? Prabodhananda Saraswati. Prabodhananda Saraswati was the uncle of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Gopal Bhatta Goswami, one of the six Goswamis, his uncle was Prabodhananda Saraswati, who after Lord Chaitanya's association, later in his life, he left Sri Rangam and went to live in Vrindavan. And he wrote very wonderful writings. And one of them was Chaitanya Chandramrita. And in that one verse, Prabhupada quotes, Prabhupada would explain like this to the devotees distributing books. Here's how you can distribute books. And he quotes the verse from Prabodhananda Saraswati saying, "My dear sir, you're so intelligent. You're so learned. You're such an elevated soul." That's like, you know, the first part. Yes, yes, oh, I can see. This is a very good person to hear from. Yes, yes, what is it you have to say? And then he says, just set aside all that rubbish for the moment and try to understand the wonderful glory and message of Lord Chaitanya. So, following Prabodhananda Saraswati and following Prabhupada's authorizing, it's recognizing the psychology of an individual, as Vasudeva is doing. Oh, great hero. Oh, sober amongst the Bhoja dynasty. Here he is with a sword to his hand.
Okay. Is there a specific reason why Krishna had to be born the eighth child instead of first child?
No. He could be born without having a mother and father. There's no specific reason. It had to be like that. He could just appear out of the sky and do everything. But he had a pastime to perform. And the intricacy of that pastime, as you read in the purport, then you'll find, you know, some of the explanation of why it was the way it was. It didn't have to be that way.
Maharaj, you said that during the difficult circumstances we have to depend on Krishna, and you gave the example of the devotee, your devotee who depended on Krishna.
Yes.
And he felt Krishna sheltered. So how to depend on Krishna? And
how to? Depend on Krishna?
Krishna.
It's not easy. sure you want to know? You have to let go of the false shelters, because they're false. Now, you can do so knowing that they're false, or you can do so when they just discombobulate, like they fall apart and they're gone. The other ones, the false ones, Krishna can take them away. That's what happened in this devotee's case. They didn't have any other recourse but to depend on Krishna. And they just, like Draupadi, threw her hands up in the air and said, "Hey Radhe," or excuse me, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda." So, knowingly or circumstantially, letting go of the false shelters and just taking shelter of Krishna. In our case, those, you know, trying circumstances, they come of their own accord. We don't have to go looking for them. They'll come anyways. So, back to this prior question, we should practice with devotion as much as we can, even when there's not trying circumstances, or when it's like medium range trying circumstances instead of the extreme trying circumstances. And try to regularly hear and chant. Engage in the Shravanam Kirtanam process regularly, so the heart becomes cleansed and we become attracted to the person who shelter is meant to be taken of. There's reason for taking shelter of Krishna. He's all powerful, he's all kind, and so forth. Okay, Prahlad, you're on.
I just had to say something. I heard in one of your lectures that the six children before Krishna and Balaram were the six bad qualities.
Yeah.
So when she asked about the eighth child, I thought that in the...
Well, Krishna could have done... But Krishna could have done that in some other way. He's not stuck. Oh, I've got to do it this way. He did it that way for that reason. But he could have done, you know, the same thing in a different way, because he's really flexible. Okay? But, yes?
I wanted to check my understanding. So in both the cases of Vasudeva and Sanatana Goswami, there were situations where there was invoking of character of the other person.
Well, they were using their skill of diplomacy.
Yes, Maharaj. So I'm just trying to understand. So in these cases, the motivation, when there is a higher motivation, the other things, like in case of Sanatana Goswami, not speaking per se the truth, or asking the other person not to say the truth, that becomes subsidiary to the higher principle.
Well, almost. Pretty close, but not exact. Because the added factor is one has to be very qualified. So one may be motivated, but not qualified. And then, you know, exercising what you just said, then you can fall in the soup. You can make some big boo-boos. So, you know, my motivation, generally, when we're not purified, our motivations are mixed. And, you know, if we act on mixed motivations, it really easily becomes, you know, the darker one takes precedence. So, because Sanatana Goswami did and Vasudeva did, therefore the door is open for any of us to do. No. But you read in that section, and Prabhupada makes a specific comment. There's another reference in the first canto, I'm trying to remember, where the moralities people will invoke and say, you know, such and such is bad. But when there's a higher purpose, when there is a higher purpose, not just intention, but when there's specifically a mandate for a higher purpose, then these things can be done. read in that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the purport where Sanatana Goswami says what he says, and you'll get some indication how Prabhupada, the language that he uses is eloquent, very beautiful. And mine isn't so eloquent. It's that we should be very careful. Yes. I hope so.
One first is I feel very inspired when I hear about the quality of Vasudev, that even Kamsa would trust that he would keep his promise.
Yeah, it's inspiring to me too also.
But I feel that I have this struggle that I'm not able to keep the commitment because I feel sometimes there is a lot to do and I'm not able to do everything, even if I say that I'll do this or that. My capacity is limited.
Uh-huh.
So
what to do? be a little more conservative about what you commit to do. That's one thing. And then, if there are things that you have committed to do and it's just unrealistic to perform, you go to the person who you made the commitment to and you express, "I think I overcommitted." Or, "Can I have a little more time?" And responsible people do that. You know, "I made a commitment." I mean, I'm thinking of a relationship I have with one devotee that's really responsible, and he's got lots of stuff to do, and he doesn't always meet his deadlines of when he committed stuff to do. But he's very regular in saying, "I know that I didn't do it, so, you know, 10 extra things besides what I normally do, so... but I'll do it next week." Or, you know, it's just, "I can't do it." You know, but generally it's, you know, will it work if I have a little extra time? If you tell me, then I'll just push the other stuff out of the way and I'll do that instead. Because to them, keeping their word is very important. Because they make their commitment because it's important. Not just, you know, casual. So it's something that's important. You commit to it, and then you commit to it because it's important, and you do it because it's important, and because you've committed.
How can you increase the capacity to...
Krishna! He's the source of all capacity. Let me ask you a question. Do you find that from now compared to 3 years ago, your capacity to perform has increased? Let me ask your wife. Has your capacity, you feel your capacity has increased?
It varies. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's not that much.
Okay, well, certainly there's the sine curve, but has it generally gone up? I would say so. I mean, without the close inspection, I would say so. What you were able to do when you were doing your studies and stuff, and what you're able to do now, you make a commitment and you perform. And even maybe whatever it is. So capacity increases just by Krishna's empowerment. And by, you know, the focus on depending upon Krishna to do, not just your own mightiness or cleverness or something. And Krishna gives you... It's true for all of us. I mean, maybe there's some exception, but I doubt it. There's always more to do than we have time to do. It's always like that. It's good. And it's always like that. It's not like, "Oh, when will the day come when I'll, you know, have everything done that I'm supposed to do?" This doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. Yeah.
You mentioned about Rukmini, that she was in Vrindavan.
Rohini. Yeah.
Rohini, she was in Vrindavan, but she is also the...
part of the Yadu dynasty.
Right. So her relationship or her rasa is of...
very unique.
Both.
Very unique. She had understanding, not the same as, but she had, it was as the residents of Vrindavan, because she had this other situation also. But she had a deep appreciation for the residents of Vrindavan. So it's not, it's unique. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, how can we explain to a new person that Janmashtami is the appearance day of Lord Krishna and not his birthday, because people usually say it's...
The appearance day of Krishna is what?
Janmashtami is the appearance day of Krishna and not his birthday, because everybody has taken birth here, like the Acharya is...
Well, it depends on the person. Let's say, for example, Western person and an Indian-born person. We'll assume it's an Indian-born person, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's important to know that. Describe in various ways that Krishna is transcendental. Because I've been studying Sri Brahma Samhita, my thoughts are going to Sri Brahma Samhita, and verses 32 through 35, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, because Jiva Goswami says in his commentary, these four verses are there to help people who otherwise measure things by material standards to understand how it can be that Krishna does what he does, and Krishna is who he is. Their doubt or their faithlessness is putting them in the position where they're wondering, how is this possible? So, and essentially, it's Krishna has inconceivable potencies. That the appreciation of Krishna's inconceivable potencies comes to one who is a devotee. Atma Bhaktau in the verse. Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhaktau. So, I'm giving some clues. The inconceivable nature of Krishna's potencies. Jiva Goswami says like this in the Sandarvas. There's no question of understanding God without accepting that he has innumerable and inconceivable potencies. So take that away, then he's one of us. But you invest, otherwise he's not God. And if he's God, then he has innumerable and inconceivable potencies. He's unlimited. Otherwise he's not God, he's one of us. So there's one. You can give examples. The classic, Narada and the cobbler and the Brahmin. You know that story. You don't know. Copies are in the Govinda's gift store. Once upon a time. Narada was traveling to go see Narayan. You know the story.
Yes.
Okay. So the cobbler, because he was a devotee, not learned, not scholarly, just was a devotee, he could understand not only with blind faith, but how it was possible that the impossible was being done by Narayan, putting an elephant through the hole of the eye of a needle. Because within the pod of the banyan tree, so many seeds are there that could make up miles and miles and miles and miles and miles and miles and miles of trees within this little seed. So if he can put all those trees inside this little seed, he put an elephant through an eye. He has invisible potencies. So that's a fundamental, given. Or fact. And if he has inconceivable potencies, then the question you just asked can be at least appreciated. He's not like us. He has inconceivable potencies, and he's manipulating those potencies for his pastimes and for his pleasure. And then, you know, it's not going to be understood, my dear newcomer, just by academic, because academic is contradictory. But with devotion, then it's not like, okay, now I'm a devotee, so I just close my eyes, and anything they tell me, I go, yes. It's not that kind, that blind, but with devotion. And the basis of devotion is acknowledging Krishna's unique position. You could ask that person, for example, do you know of Bhagavad Gita? Oh yes, know Bhagavad Gita. Do you accept Bhagavad Gita as, you know, it's within the Bhagavad Gita is truths about God, about the absolute truth. Most people will say yes. Most people, most newcoming, no, you're done. Because then you just go to the verse where, let's take a look at this one. Krishna says, some people think that I've assumed this human-like form. They do not know my higher nature, which is changeless and supreme. So if you're thinking he's like us, and he's taken on a form, like we've taken on a form, there's a soul, it's something inside Krishna, and then there's, you know, then there's the form of Krishna, and he's the inside, and that's like us, the soul inside the body. Abhijananti ma mudha manushim tanamashritam parambhavam. So what is this parambhavam? So you just educate them. And new people, it's like they're not used to hearing, and so it doesn't go in so easily. But at least, okay, like there's this, and it's intelligence is to distinguish one thing from another thing. So here's what we're like, and here's what Krishna's like, and here's a verse. If those people who think that Krishna has assumed a form like we've assumed a form, well, he doesn't say very complimentary things about that person. It's fool. They're mistaken. They're fools. Here's the real position. And that's so. When he appears, he does it this way. When we appear, we do it that way. And it's different. So that's where, therefore, we celebrate Krishna Janmashtami. We may celebrate your birthday, my birthday, and, you know, other people's birthday. But it's not the same as Krishna's appearance. And describe the nature of what on the evening of Krishna's appearance, is it what happens in a maternity ward? You ever hear of a baby being born like that? So it's different. It's not eulogy, it's just he's in another category. Depends on the person, how you... Okay. Oh! I have two questions. Three. Just one. Okay.
So, I was interacting with this person yesterday, and I was inviting to one of the Bhagavad Gita discussion groups, Bhakti Mishra, and he was kind of jokingly mentioning that, you know, I'm not qualified enough to come to this group, or I have bad qualities. I'm not going to come. So what can I say to such a person?
Depends on the person. I can't say.
Okay.
Just become his friend. I mean, have your little informal bhakti vriksha discussion right there, and, you know, is it one of your work in the workplace?
Mm-hmm.
Some other place. So is it some person you come in contact with from time to time?
I can from a lot.
Okay, so you just, like, tell you what. Let's do a little informal thing.
Okay.
And, you know, you don't have to come to this awesome group of people that are going to make you feel like you're a shrimp or something. But just, you know, we'll hang out together and do the similar thing. Once you're comfortable with that, you'll feel really comfortable with our group. But you don't have to tell them that right off the bat. That's just like where the train's going. Okay. Yes. Last question. Yeah.
Today's reading in the beginning, when Kamsa was supported in Devaki, he read that Vasudeva maintained very calm and exercised his diplomatic, all the talent, like diplomatic and philosophical thing.
Yeah.
And just before he gives a word that he would give his children because they were killed him. That just before that was, we read that he was into anxiety because he was into anxiety.
Anxiety.
So why he was into anxiety in the beginning?
Why not? He's human after all.
Yeah, in the beginning I had that question why he was in anxiety, but from your answers to it.
Well, it happens. He's even for someone, even for Krishna, of course it's different when Krishna does this. When the cowherd boys were entering the mouth of Agasura, Krishna was struck. Oh no! But his anxiety was, I know that they won't be able to live without for a moment without me. They won't be able to maintain their lives not seeing me. And then he overcame that emotion and he knew what to do and he did what he had to do. His feeling that feeling is not like me and you feeling that feeling. His feeling, his like Hanuman, when Hanuman was looking for Sita. And he couldn't find Sita. And he knew the consequences of not finding Sita. Very serious consequences. So he was in anxiety. So he became double determined. I must find Sita. So those moments can be there for such elevated personalities. But it's not the same as yours and mine. We become discouraged or bewildered or, you know, whatever it is. Influenced by the deluding potency. Great personalities, that doesn't happen. Arjuna became bewildered. Different. It serves as an impetus for further shelter taking.
But in the same episode, like the duration, in the beginning he was, that's very stressed here, like in the beginning he was stressed, that was very undisturbed.
Yeah? It's the same question asked again in a different way, and it's the same answer.
In the same context where we have seen.
Yeah. So that's not caused by his impurity or his unsteadiness in devotion. It's a particular emotion, a spike of a particular emotion in relation to his service to Krishna. It's an impetus for ecstatic feelings towards Krishna, which is different than our anxieties.
Here the anxiety is trying to protect his wife, right?
But it's yes, and that's part of the bigger picture, which the bigger picture is he's an unalloyed devotee of Krishna. He has varieties of services unto Krishna. That's one of them. But Krishna is his protector. He never, no, it's not that, oh, Krishna has abandoned me. He was. What he had attempted wasn't work. Anyway, it's just kind of common sense. What he was attempted wasn't working, and so now, what other arrows do I have in my quiver? So then he drew one. It's an intensification of his shelter-taking in Krishna. That's what it is. That's his anxiety. That's transcendental anxiety, as opposed to our kind, where our enthusiasm weakens and our intelligence wavers and we may scream or something like that. Different. Okay. Srila Prabhupada.